And before we get to Bernadette, just a message in. If ESCOM is decelerated, a state of disaster, then the ruling ANC should rightfully be decelerated, a state of disaster. Somebody weighing in. How do I report an outright case of religious discrimination and bigotry by a public figure in our town to Cape Talk? Well, let us know. Just send us an email and we'll kind of check it out. It's the kind of thing that we have shown to be very tolerant about. I think just given our history about multiple religions, you know, being that tavern of the season, the very many people that popped in here, and Islam, of course, coming in via this particular city as well, and the proud history, social fabric, and contribution to that social fabric is celebrated by all of us. Of course, we've got a great story about a Jewish history, and how people found refuge after the First and Second World Wars right here in Cape Town as well. And of course, that African tradition and religions that come with that. So we have tolerance here, and we shouldn't be tolerating religious bigots. So that's how I feel on about that. Bernadette Wicks in Johannesburg, our EWN reporter, joins us on the line. And a class action, Anglo sued on behalf of children and women. Now, this is in Zambia. Bernadette, welcome. Just tell us more about the background to the story.
Sure. So essentially, the story centers on a town called Kabwe in Zambia, and it's situated on the copper belt, so obviously mineral rich. And in particular, it centers on the Kabwe mine, which was actually originally called the Broken Hill mine, and it was named after an Australian mine. It's a lead and zinc works. And it was named after an Australian mine that actually had a problem a couple of years earlier with lead exposure in the community. And there had been a commission and a lot of very strong findings made. So this mine functioned for some 90 years, and then it eventually shut down in 1994. But during this time, the operations were really unsafe, and it led to lead pollution in the community. And the thing with lead is that it doesn't biodegrade. So it still remains in the soil today, and that means like the communities there today are obviously still feeling the effects of this lead exposure, particularly children. So they are now suing Anglo. They're suing Anglo-American South Africa over its historic involvement in the mine. Now, Anglo never owned the mine, and that's important to explain. It was owned originally by a company called the Rhodesian Broken Hill Development Company, and then it was nationalized, and then it was owned by a parastatal called ZZCM, and then it was eventually closed in 74. But there were about 50 years between 25 and 74 where Anglo was invested in the mine. And so this community is seeking to hold it responsible for the lead exposure that they are now experiencing, essentially.
Okay, so it's 1974, not 1994, and that's Anglo-American South African Group's association with this particular mine.
Yes. So during this period, it's one of the bones of contention is exactly how involved Anglo was. So the community says that they had sort of a direct involvement, and they were directly involved in its operations. What Anglo says is this isn't the case. It had an indirect minority shareholding of around 10% in the company that operated the mine, and it provided certain technical and advisory services. But its position is, we never owned the mine, we never operated the mine. Kabwe is widely known as one of the most polluted places in the world. And I mean, Anglo accepts this, and they say it's a serious problem, but the fault lies with the parastatal that took over in particular. They say a lot of the pollution was caused after they sort of became uninvolved in the mine. There were really poor emission controls in place. There were periods where there were no emission controls in place. And what Anglo says is their problem, their gripe is with ZCCM. The other issue is that after the mine was decommissioned, there were plans to rehabilitate the land, but those plans were not properly followed through with. And so they lay this all at the feet of ZCCM, and they say they sympathize with the community, but it's not, they don't bear responsibility in their view.
So our information is that this class action brought on behalf of women and children impacted. Do you have a sense of the scale of impact that this lead poisoning has had on the local community?
Yeah, so we must also just state that this case is only at the certification stage at the moment. Before you can bring a class action, you have to get permission from the court. They need to certify the class action. So that is currently underway in the Joburg High Court.
Okay.
Um, And it's the very first step kind of in the court proceedings. If they're successful, then they'll be able to bring the class action, and that obviously takes it a lot further. But yeah, so going through the court papers, I mean, there are several affidavits from the parents of the children in whose name this class action is being brought. And they detail sort of the experiences that they've had with what they believe and what is suspected to be symptoms of lead exposure. And it's heartbreaking stuff, especially considering that this is a poor community. This is a community that's already vulnerable. And they talk about their children having debilitating headaches at 8 months old. When they get older, headaches that keep them away from school for days on end. And I mean, you can imagine how important education is across the board, but especially in a community like that. They talk about the stomach problems. They talk about learning difficulties. And again, you know how important education is there. And, you know, looking more broadly at the effects of lead exposure, the way that it's described in the papers is as being quite an insidious poison, and that children are particularly vulnerable to it. It's just simply because there's two reasons. The one is that they obviously play in the soil and they get covered in the soil all day, so they're literally surrounded by it. In infants, they'll pick it up and they'll put it in their mouths. And the other issue is that because they're developing, their bodies are more susceptible to it and they absorb more of it. And they obviously suffer these effects at the time. But then what also happens with girls is when they grow and they come of childbearing age, the lead is stored in their bones and it's then remobilized when they fall pregnant. And it continues to, their unborn children continue to be exposed to it through their bodies. They continue to get sick from it. So it's really awful. And ultimately, and it's not, from my understanding, it's not common, it's extreme cases, but ultimately, lead exposure can lead to brain damage, organ damage, and even death in some cases.
The claimant said, he said, principally young children are suffering alarming levels of lead poisoning, which, of course, as Bernadette has shared, manifests in various ways. They say, including the blood lead level, BLL, causes a range of significant conditions, psychological, intellectual, behavioral damage to serious and permanent physical damage to their bodily organs, neurological systems, and fertility. So, Bernadette, you're saying that the South Gauteng High Court is sitting at this moment in time to determine if a class action is due. And I do believe the remedies that are sought is in the form of compensation for these children, as well as girls and women with lead poisoning. Do you have a sense of the quantum?
No, at this stage, there's no sense of the quantum. Some of the relief also covers, in addition to that financial compensation, sort of an order for rehabilitation of the land. Obviously, they want to prevent this from happening going forward. At the time, we don't have any sense of the quantum. We do know that, according to the papers at least, there could be as many as 140,000 people who would fall into the classes that are potentially being represented in this case, though.
And you say it's conspicuously absent. The other two mining groups, the one was a parastatal, you say, that were part of this particular mine from 1974. They're not part of this class action.
They aren't. So these are obviously Zambian-based entities. So if they did want to bring action against them, they would need to do it in Zambia. The position that they take is that they actually aren't able to get justice in Zambia. They say the only way they can get justice is here in South Africa. The reason being that they are the class action that they're proposing is what's known as an opt-out class action. So initially, everyone who falls into that class is included, but they can obviously, if they so wish, down the line, give notice that they don't want to be included. Zambian law doesn't, they wouldn't be able to do that in Zambia. The other issues are around the fees. They say that Zambia wouldn't allow them to do contingency fees. And like I mentioned earlier, this is a poor community. They don't have the kind of funds that they would otherwise be required to put up front for a case of this magnitude. So that's their position, is that this is really their only option for any sort of justice.
It's nearly a season of four class actions, or at least threats thereof. Have you had a look at the history of class actions in South Africa and successes achieved on that front? Oh, have we lost you, Bernadette? It appears as if we may have lost Bernadette Wicks out in Johannesburg. Our EWN reporter on this story, Anglo-American sued on behalf of children and women poisoned by the world's most toxic lead mine. It is the Kabwe mine. It was part of the Anglo-American South African group, and that from 1925 to 1974, as she's reported. It was one of the world's most productive lead mines during this time. Did you know that? It is alleged in the class action that Anglo-American South Africa is liable, including the following, because ASA's role in controlling, managing, supervising and advising on the technical, medical and safety aspects of the mine's operation. Of course, Anglo-American South Africa have offered a bit of a rebuttal if it can be caused that. They say the parastatal that took over from them back in 1974 was probably the person that flouted those kind of safety rules that were part of the mine while they were present. But interesting little story. Since we are a big commodities country, there's a lot of mining happening, and while it doesn't happen here in Cape Town necessarily,